Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. Today we have an interesting guest on our podcast because he is in the wild out there, you know, like because he's one of the few South Americans, one of the few South American guests that we have had, and he runs a business and he's into a very interesting business. So let's talk all about that. First of all, welcome, Sam.
Thanks, Ganesh. Thanks for having me. Namaste, does it mean like hello or good morning?
Yeah, namaste is like hello. It's like a greeting.
Okay, well, namaste, Ganesh. Yeah, so I'm not actually South American originally. I'm European, but I did move to South America, Colombia specifically, 7 years ago. It's really beautiful here. I'm assuming you're from India, right?
Yes,
Calcutta,
I am.
If I'm not mistaken.
I'm from Bangalore.
Bangalore.
Yeah.
So we had some people here at the retreat from India, and they say that this area here kind of reminds them of India because it's very green and there's a lot of hills. So I guess that that would be, you'd feel at home here. But I moved here 7 years ago, and it's been a beautiful journey. I love it because comparing to Europe, you know, Europe is very cold and people are also very cold. But here everyone is friendly, and the weather is also nice. There must be a connection, you know.
I don't know which university did that study where they found that more pleasant weather leads to pleasant people. I think you have experienced it firsthand.
Yeah, you know, even the vitamin D, which you get from exposure to sun, is also something that gives you a better mood. So it's kind of like expected, I guess, that if you get good weather, you get good mood. So I definitely not see myself going back to Europe, that's for sure.
Got it. So how did you like come up with this business of yours? Like, what was that like aha moment where you went, okay, this is what I'm going to do?
So Ganesh, even though I would like to take credit and say that I came up with everything myself and it just, it's all my idea. Reality is when you start working with ayahuasca or any spirituality, I'm sure you know, you get something that's called the synchronicities that start happening in your life, meaning that things sort of happen to you and you end up on a path and you kind of continue on the path. And it's not like I've never set out with an intention to start an ayahuasca retreat. It kind of just slowly happened to me as a combination of first wanting to drink medicine from my house, from my country house, instead of going to other places. And then a person coming into my life who wanted to rent my place to do retreats there. Then him saying, why don't you just do retreats and I'll come and give the medicine. And then him sort of failing me and then me finding another person. And eventually, step by step, I just found myself in a moment where I ended up having an ayahuasca retreat. And of course, in between of all these events, there was a lot of work involved, but didn't feel like work. Still really doesn't. So yeah, that's how I ended up with an ayahuasca retreat.
So it's all a big accident.
It's all a big accident, but it's also kind of like mixed in with a lot of work and good intentions, because for anyone who works with ayahuasca, for example, and gets relief from their issues, be it, you know, depression or anxiety, you really get that zeal to sort of try and spread the word, and that happened to me as well. So I guess that was a big underlying cause. Like you get such good results, you can't help but want the rest of the people around you to feel that as well. And so fueled by that and also the at the moment rising interest in ayahuasca, I ended up with this very successful ayahuasca retreat, which I think as of now we have helped more than 1,000 people, and we have more than 250 five-star reviews on Google as well.
What is ayahuasca? What is ayahuasca according to you?
Ayahuasca is a brew. It's a mix of two plants. It is grown traditionally here in northwest Amazon. So countries like Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil, they all have this piece of Amazon in their territory where it traditionally grows. It's a cultivated plant, meaning the shamans or the taitas, as they call, as they're called here in Colombia, they grow their own ayahuasca and then they cook it. And it's a ceremony that lasts about 3 days. In the end, you end up with the viscous, sort of viscous, brown-looking liquid that you drink in a ceremonial setting, and it produces an effect which the easiest way to describe it, it kind of connects you to yourself, connects you to nature, connects you to like deep underlying feelings, and it helps you heal things like depression, PTSD, anxiety, addiction, many, many things. And also sometimes physical ailments, like we had people get relief from fibromyalgia, psoriasis, migraines, and that kind of stuff. It's a very sort of shotgun approach medicine where it addresses many things. But whenever you have a disease, whether it's an emotional disease or a physical disease, and it comes from some kind of trauma or emotion, you get relief when you drink ayahuasca. But it's not that the ayahuasca itself doesn't completely fix you, but it provides you first, it provides you in with the relief in symptoms, but it also shows you what to do. It's kind of like hard to explain for someone who never worked with plant medicines, but they say it has a spirit or some kind of intelligence. Some people might say you're talking to the plant spirit. Some people might say you're talking to the God. Other people might say you're talking to your subconscious. But in the end, what you end up with is a set of instructions, so to speak, for you to improve. So when you come to drink ayahuasca, you get the relief, and then you get information that helps you to change your life, to then feel better and be better.
Got it. Because, you know, of course, there is this whole holistic kind of point of view, right, in this ritual. And you know, I find it kind of amusing that scientists still have not figured out why does it work. Of course, they have figured out why and how does it work, right? They're like, okay, you have this particular chemical which, you know, which helps your body, blah, blah, blah. But no one has ever figured out why does it work.
Yeah, so it's interesting because we understand that there's a molecule and it attaches itself to certain receptors in the brain. But we also understand that about 4 hours after, the molecule is completely out of your body. So what they can't explain is how come you keep having a long-lasting effect. Like for some people, it can be life-changing. You can get a person that's suicidal and they're ready to kill themselves. Then they go through the ceremony and they no longer want to kill themselves and they're happy and they love their life. And they, you know, how do you explain that? They cannot really explain that. And this is where it's helpful to ground ourselves in a tradition because it's nothing new. It's not something I discovered or created. It's a 4,000 to 5,000 year old tradition. And we just come to those people that have been doing it for generations and generations. And they have this wisdom and they explain to us how it works. It's just sometimes it's difficult to accept, you know, those concepts like talking to a plant spirit. It's interesting. I've actually, about half year ago, I recorded an episode. I also have a podcast myself, and it was with one of our patients, the girl that came. She lives in UK, but she's from India originally. And while we were recording, she was in India. So what the episode was about was about parallels in between Amazonian shamanic tradition and Eastern spirituality in India specifically. Like everything from chakras to energy healing, to even plant medicines, because apparently in India before there was a liquid plant medicine that was a psychedelic. It was called Soma, but I think unfortunately they lost the recipe, and we're very lucky that with ayahuasca that lineage has never been broken. and they never lost the recipe. So it's a privilege as well.
What's amazing to me is I have talked to many people who have gone through the ritual and, you know, in the preparation of this particular episode, of course. What I really find amazing about ayahuasca is once it's out of your system, like it's out, like it does not have any, you know, lasting effect on you like other drugs do. And that's kind of interesting, even for me as a, just a normal person, but for also, you know, for science, right? Like, because I don't think like, because I was talking to another, like one of my friends who is into, you know, psychedelics and all these things. And he was explaining how, you know, like, I think 65 scientists have been working for 13 years, but they cannot find, they cannot figure out a way why does, like, ayahuasca does not have any long-lasting effects in terms of bad effects, right? So, what do you think, like, is going on there?
So, you know, when people, generally the issue begins when people put ayahuasca in the category of a drug, because for, you know, thousands of years, it's been a traditional medicine that's been used as a medicine. For the last 50 years, after, you know, Nixon administration made this big mistake and called it a drug, now it's called a drug, and they're trying to understand it as a drug and not as a, as a, as a medicine. What happens is, with ayahuasca, like when people talk about drugs, they get worried that, you know, I'm going to get addicted, or it's all just, you know, for to trip and have visions and stuff. But with ayahuasca, you can't get addicted to ayahuasca, because every time, let's say you have a problem when you want to drink ayahuasca to get some kind of relief, every time there's a bit of a resistance because you don't really want to do it, because the process is not really that pleasant. There can be moments that are very euphoric, but generally it's a lot of work. It's like a lot of spiritual and emotional work. So you don't get addicted to it. And not only it doesn't cause negative effects, as in, let's say, when you drink a lot of alcohol, next day you wake up with the headache. Yeah. With ayahuasca, you actually get, you feel better when you drink it. For example, if you drink it, you purge, which means that you either vomit or have diarrhea, and next day you feel very clean and sort of fresh. Not only it makes your mind kind of go slow and lazy, you feel more sharp after drinking it. It kind of, it's, I would like to compare it to a like a reset, like when you restart your computer and it works faster. That's kind of how it feels like, a big restart for your brain. The mechanisms of it are unknown, and as you say, 65 scientists couldn't answer it, neither can I. It's like we don't know what happens, but what we do know is that it works, so we just keep doing it.
Because you're not the first person, you know, who sort of gets agitated whenever ayahuasca is mentioned as drugs. But because fundamentally it's not, first of all, and you know, people always compare that to drugs because it's out there, right? You know, and people don't truly understand it. And I feel like, you know, this whole capitalistic society, whenever they don't understand a particular thing, they're like, okay, this is outlawed now. Like, you cannot use it. For example, in India, like ayahuasca is, you know, illegal. Like, you cannot consume it.
Yeah, that's a huge mistake. They did not prohibit ayahuasca and psychedelics in general just because they didn't understand it. There was actually a very solid reason behind it, and it's a bit of a conspiracy theory, you might say, but it seems very obvious to me. But when in the 60s LSD became very popular, and there was, you know, hippie circles, and people didn't want to go work in corporations, or didn't want to go specifically fight the war in Vietnam, what they did, they to stop that and not to lose control over the population, they had to prohibit all the drugs. And you know, if US adopts some rule or some law, then it quickly spreads all over the world, because you know, obviously they control UN. And it just, what happened was psychedelics were threatening governments and threatening their control. And I understand that. I would also not want the society to collapse, but prohibiting it is also not an answer. It's it should be, you know, instead just taking it seriously and maybe having some regulations. But there's nothing dangerous about ayahuasca if you do it right. You know, alcohol is much more dangerous than ayahuasca. But they did not prohibit it to protect people. They're prohibited to protect the government interests. And I mean, that's just expected. You know, imagine you are a government and your population stops listening to you. Like, that's what you would do.
Because I have read this somewhere else too, where they were like, we don't want people to be free, like, you know, like, we want them to act as machines and work for us. Because my follow-up question was like, why do you think, you know, like, how or why should governments like legalize ayahuasca, and what's the like proper plan for it?
So I want to first address something you just said, and that's that the governments don't want people to be free. I'll give you an example, right? You have a lot of people that there's this quote from Fight Club. I don't know if you read this book, but it says, we go and do jobs we hate.
Oh yeah.
To earn money, money to buy things we don't need, to impress people we don't like.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we are in this weird reality where there's a lot of unhappy people that think that maybe now I'm going to buy this apartment and then I will get happy. Or no, maybe this better car and then I'll get happy. And they never get happy. So it's a little frustrating. But it's great for the economy, right? Because the people keep working hard and they keep buying things. If you get somebody that goes and drinks ayahuasca and just says like, yeah, I'll just buy myself a little farm and have a cow and live in one with the nature and write a book or something like that. It's not really, it's good for him, but not good for society, right? So that's why it also threatens them. And Sam, once again, like,
it's good for society, but it's not good for governments.
And it's also not good for our planet, right? Because we overconsume stuff and just destroy the planet. It's like, I'm also not a revolutionary. I don't say like, we should all just drink ayahuasca and live in a cave, right? It's also not the way. It's like, we need to find a better way for us to live as a human beings on this planet and find balance with ourselves and also with the nature. And nobody knows how exactly it would be like, but what we know is that the current system is not working and there's a mental health crisis and everyone is depressed and anxious. And what we also know is that the psychedelics and the spiritual traditions like the one in your country could be the answer in finding that new path. But how it's going to look like, we don't know. And me, myself, personally, you know, I'm pretty comfortable in current system, because at least you know it and you can navigate it. And change is always difficult.
You know, I think you are correct in saying that there needs to be a better system. Because we are kind of like a lost cause right now. Like, humans don't know what the fuck they're doing, to be honest. It's almost like they have lost their purpose, and people are afraid to take chances, like, just in life. I'm not even talking about anything else, right? It does kind of sometimes seems like there needs to be one big event which would, like, you know, change perception of humans. Just like COVID almost did, right? Because COVID really helped people understand, okay, what I'm looking for or what I'm fighting for is not the real thing, you know. This is not going to last me for life.
Definitely. Now, COVID was one of those events, definitely, that woke a lot of people up. Me, myself, we started the retreat around COVID. COVID was for me the big push to go from living in a city to living in the countryside, which then was, you know, it was a prerequisite for everything else then that happened later on, and led me to starting this retreat.
Mm-hmm. So how is the retreat going on right now?
So as of now, we have three retreats every month. So 18 days altogether. People can come. There is a four-day retreat followed by 2 one-week retreats. And people can also come for 11 days and for 18 days. So as of now, we're in the rest period. So people left about a week ago, and the new group is coming in about a week from now. So we're resting, if you can call it rest, because there's a lot of constructions and improvements. We're building cabins and building, improving roads, and you know, there's, it's always busy here, but it's going pretty well. Yeah, I as I said, I didn't set out originally to start an ayahuasca retreat. It did happen, and I'm really happy it did. I'm really happy. I know it's my life's goal, and I've been sort of going down that path. But also at the same time, it's a very difficult business to work in, because it is a business, but at the same time, it is a spiritual endeavor where you heal other people, and finding balance is very difficult, which comes, you know, it's a dilemma, right? You need money to pay the workers, but you also need money to make improvements. But you also don't want to charge too much, because you want it to be accessible, because you want as many people as possible to experience that healing. And it's kind of like an internal fight that you're always fighting within yourself. And it's hard to be spiritual at the same time while you're charging money and running a business. But you can't run away from the fact that it is a business, and we do live in a capitalist society where that's how things work. But generally, I think so far we're finding good balance, because I'll give you an example. An average ayahuasca retreat in South America is from $1,500 to $2,500. And as of now, we're able to offer that experience for only $595 US. I don't know for how much longer we'll be able to do that, because, you know, inflation is happening, and we have a team of 15 people that we need to pay. But I'm definitely conscious of that side of it. It's a constant balancing act.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking something about, like, you know, finding the right balance. And I was like, I wish hospitals in Western countries thought about that even for a second, you know, before charging an arm and leg for just like an emergency visit, especially in the United States.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Because
you get you break your leg, and it's like $20,000. You need to. It's like buying a car.
Sam, I think you're way underestimating it, because let me tell you a small story, right? I was one of my friends, and you know, he's in the United States, of course. His friend broke his right hand, you know, in a bike, you know, crash. Let's say, can you estimate how much it cost him, just treating that right hand?
Well, I'm assuming that it's more than 20,000, right?
Yeah.
What, 50?
You are like way too under. Still at 50.
100?
No, still higher than that.
120?
No, it was 365.
Wow. What, did they give him a hand of gold or something?
They better have given him the, you know, hand of gold. And that
the golden hand with diamond nails. That's why it was so expensive.
Yeah, I think it was like, yeah, it was like the Thanos hand.
yeah.
You know, it cost him $365,000. Imagine.
Crazy.
Imagine that hospital thinking like you, right? They were like, yeah, we need to pay our people, but we also need to take care of patients. So let's, you know, dial down the prices a bit.
Yeah. Well, they are the part of the system, right? The system is wrong, and it's hard to escape. Like, There's insurance companies that create this whole loop. I've seen some videos on the subject and why US is so ridiculous when it comes to medical expenses. It's the system, right? And you can't really blame an individual doctor because he had to go to the medical school and accrue the debt of $500,000 as well. It's just the entire system is is off. So now he needs that money to pay his student loans, and you can't really judge him. There's just something is wrong. It's like US system needs ayahuasca to like reset. Think fresh. Especially the presidents, right? They keep throwing the money everywhere.
Yes. You know, like I'll just give you like one small irritating fact, let's say. In United States, there was a guy who got bit by a snake, right? Can you like after telling you that 365 cost just for an arm, can you estimate like what was his expense for just a snake?
500?
Bite? No, dude, no. You're still way off.
1 million?
No, higher.
2 million?
Yeah, it's 2.6.
Well, I'm speechless.
Yeah, imagine what you could do with $2.6 million.
Yeah, you can probably find some kind of cheaper way to heal the some antidote for snake venom, you know?
Yeah. I mean, $2.6 million is way too much money, right? Like, you could build 10 houses in that much of money.
You can probably create like 100 new human beings with that amount of money.
And that is how much is spent on a snake biting a person. Anyways, that's the crazy world that we live in. Because you know, my first exposure to ayahuasca and all these things was Joe Rogan. The famous scapegoat that everybody tells is the crazy person. I think it was Graham Hancock, I don't remember the exact episode, that he was talking about ayahuasca, and you know, he's one of the greatest like pyramid and you know Egypt civilization researchers, historians in the world, and he was talking about how ayahuasca dates so much back. And he was one of the first scientists who claimed that ayahuasca and you know like using herbs as chemicals as medicines dates far, far back than 5,000 years, because old historians used to say it was like 4,000 to 5,000 years, but now I saw the recent estimate was somewhere around 36,000 years. And that just shows you like people have been doing this for so fucking long that humans, you know, in today's world don't even know that, right?
Well, it's hard to go that far in the past, but what we do know is that it's a very, very old tradition, right? And it kind of gives you comfort because you know that if so many people done it for so many generations, then it means it's safe, right? If they, let's say, why is not heroin a 5,000 year old tradition? Because you don't procreate, you're not able to create other generations. So whenever my personal approach to psychedelics in general is, I would never take anything that does not have at least 1,000-year-old tradition, because how else can you know that it's safe really long term? And I mean like safe for your kids to be okay and your kids' kids to be okay.
Yeah, I think
you don't know what. No, carry on.
I think you have a pretty good requisite for a drug. You are like, it's either 1,000 years old or fuck it, I'm not taking it. That's a very solid approach. It's a historically accurate kind of approach that you're having too. And on Facebook, I saw that a shaman was kind of angry. He was saying, you know, alcohol is legal, and you know, there was a statistician sitting next to him, and he said that 49% of world's domestic abuse or issues come from alcohol, and 93% of you know, like, small incidents happen due to alcohol, but alcohol is legal and totally fine.
It's very easy to understand how this works. Whatever makes money is legal. Whatever doesn't make money is illegal. It's like if you have a person that is taking antidepressants and has been taking antidepressants for 20 years and pays, you know, $300 every month. Then you get this person go and do an ayahuasca retreat and he stops taking antidepressants forever. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not good for... it's not good for the system, for the money. When somebody's drinking alcohol, they spend a lot of money on alcohol. There's you know, from the actual price of what alcohol is worth, more than half just goes straight to the government, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then this person is still functioning. They keep working and they keep buying stuff, and so they don't care about that. That's why it's legal. But if it's traditional, it helps people and it's actually much safer. They don't care as long as it doesn't make money. Unfortunately, that's just how the system works.
Yeah, correct. Because, you know, how stupid alcoholism is. People pay to drink, right? And the next morning they pay to get rid of the hangover.
Yeah. I'll give you an interesting parallel, right? With all the indigenous medicines, be it ayahuasca or San Pedro or Cambo or rape, it always hurts first, and then you feel better. And with the drugs and alcohol, it feels good at first, and then it hurts afterwards. For example, I'll show you this here. This is called rapé, and it's a very fine tobacco snuff, but it's not the same tobacco you have in cigarettes. It's a jungle tobacco. It's called Nicotina rustica, and when you sit down to meditate with it, you take a little bit and you blow it up your nose with a little tube, and at first, for about 10 seconds, it hurts. But then after that, you feel really centered and you can meditate and all your thoughts go away. And for 20 minutes, you can reset, relax. And it's a great medicine for introspection. But it hurts at first and then it feels better. And, you know, if I get a beer and I drink it, it feels nice. And if I drink five of them, then I feel bad. I don't have anything against alcohol. It's just it's the abuse of alcohol. And generally... everything is all about the intention and the abuse. For example, you can have a tobacco and set an intention, connect with the plant spirit of tobacco, and you can get the healing. Or you can put it in a cigarette, smoke it every day 20 times, abuse it, and get a lung cancer. It's the same thing, but it's your approach. And what is wrong with our society is not the molecules and not the things around. It's a lack of tradition and lack of intention, because we lost it. We got disconnected from ourselves, disconnected from nature, disconnected from tradition, and that's why we're sort of running around like a headless chicken, trying to make a lot of money to become happy, and we never get happy.
And also that money can lose value any moment. That's what people don't understand, right? In Western countries, like, look at Bolivia, look at Kenya, look at, I don't know, freaking 50 countries in this world, right? Like, people lost their Venezuela. Money overnight. Yeah, Venezuela being the biggest example. You know, like, just look at what happened to hardworking people. They got fucked over because they absolutely, as you said, they were running around like a headless chicken, you know, behind money. They were like, I need money. But they did not create nothing of value. So
money, it's like, things, it's nice to have them, but they're not going to make you happy.
But also, Sam, it's like, you know, after a certain point, money does not make any difference. You know, because a research said that you need $1.3 million to live your life, like, you know, standard of life, right? And once you reach that number, anything above that, it does not like elevate your lifestyle. It's just adding to bullshit.
Well, but what if you get bitten by a snake?
Yeah, fuck.
Then you need 2.6.
Yeah, then you need to quickly run to Canada and get treated.
Yeah, no, there is a certain, I think they say up to $10,000 a month, you can feel the increase in your happiness. But after that, it doesn't make any difference anymore.
Yeah, especially in countries like mine, India, 10,000 is a lot of money. Like, yeah, you could be like balling like an absolute rich person at $10,000 per month.
No, same here in Colombia. I think this number is for like Western countries. I would say here probably 3,000 to 5,000, and you can already be, you know, having a very good lifestyle. And after that. Yeah, you can set yourself goals about buying boats or cars, which will not make you happier. I guess the only part where money makes you happier is when money buys you more freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like not having to do something you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And about alcohol, you said I'm not against alcohol. I'm absolutely against it. I'm like opposite to you. I'm like, fuck alcohol. Because I'm convinced at this point of time, looking at history, that alcohol has claimed more lives and it has caused more chaos than all wars put together ever.
No, I believe that. What I'm saying that I'm definitely against alcohol being so all over the place and like such a big part of our culture where you need to drink to be happy. But I'm not personally against it because I never had problems with alcohol. But that's also because I was always very conscious of the dangers, meaning I never allowed myself to get addicted to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're one of the minorities, I think.
What do you say?
I think you're one of the minorities who is able to control themselves.
No, definitely, it's a risky thing to do because eventually, over time, it might find a way. Maybe I'll change my mind 10 years from now. But interestingly enough, a lot of people come to drink ayahuasca and they get relief from alcoholism. Even those who did not come here for that specifically, you just let's talk a little bit about addiction, right? You can get addicted to anything. It can be alcohol. It can be cigarettes. But also can be your work. It can be sex. It can be porn. It can be food. Anything. So, the substance itself is not to blame. It's it's generally you get addicted because you are running away from some emotion, and you use that substance to make you feel better, and that's how you get addicted to it. So if you don't feel bad, then you no longer feel addicted. It's interesting, and I've seen it so much, and I notice it myself. For example, when I'm very stressed and I'm very anxious, I always go on my phone and I like to scroll through those short videos on social media because it helps me distract. So it's an addiction, you could say. But when I feel good, I don't feel like doing it because I don't feel pain. I'm not running away from the pain.
But you know, it also takes a lot of self-discipline and self-control, right? First of all, not to get into these things, but also to take it in moderation. You know, the simplest example I can give you is about wedding rings. You know, until you know, even late 1930s, it was not at all a practice to give a wedding ring to a girl, like when you proposed, right? Diamond Industries made this ad where they were like, ask your man to gift you a stone. you know. And
yeah,
today, if you look at it, if you don't have a wedding ring, what is even a proposal? Like, people are so freaking oxymoronic that they would spend more than what their house is worth on a stone.
Yeah, it just shows you how easily we are manipulated, right?
Yeah.
And how a generation of a certain advertisement
mm-hmm.
becomes our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I guess you need to think fresh and not allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those stones don't even have much value, really. It's the value we assign to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I would always, I like to think this way. Let's say you want to buy a new car and you have an mm-hmm. old car. I when I was back in my old profession, I would always like to think, because for to buy this car, I would need to work certain amount of years
mm-hmm.
doing the work that I did not enjoy back then. Is the pain of working out those years to get this car worth the pleasure of like 1 week when you get a new car and it feels good? So if, I think if people ask themselves that question, then they would change their mind about their buying behaviors. But once again, it's not good. It's not good for society because people stop spending, economy stops spinning, right? And that's why we are conditioned to keep buying. And a lot of time, it's stuff we don't need.
Yes, definitely. That's kind of the crazy world that we live in. That we often forgo traditions and, what our ancestors really taught us, right? And here is the worst thing, right? Like this notion that people think that people in olden days were idiots. You know, I'm like, I don't think like that's how time works. You know, people did not become smart over time, right? Like, because if you look at early 1900s, people would fix their own vehicles and houses, right? And in today's generation, people would not know what the fuck to do if their AC stopped working.
Yeah, we're more reliant on each other. So
mm-hmm.
as a society, we know more and we can say, yeah, look at us. We're humans are so smart. We have smartphones now. But like, can you make a smartphone yourself? Not really, right?
Sam, people could not grow carrot out of the ground even if their life was on the line. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. We all depend on each
other. Right? I mean, if you think about it, agriculture is so simple. It's not complicated. It's not John Deere machines that you require. You require soil, water, and light.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like going on limb here saying, you know, it is that simple to do agriculture. But people cannot do it. And it is so similar to coming back to what we were talking earlier when you said, you know, like, all of the drugs, you know, it's so good when you start taking it, but to feel miserable at the end of it. And I think in today's world, it is so similar about people also, right? Because you can see once people hit their 30s or 30 plus, they start to become salty because it was good for 10 years. And now, you know, it's starting to, the hangover is starting to come over.
Yeah. If you guys get addicted to alcohol, need some help, come drink ayahuasca with us. I did a podcast episode with one guest. He has been he came to drink ayahuasca for some other reason, and then all of a sudden when he came back, he noticed that he didn't want to drink anymore, and he messaged me, so we talked about it. So for some people that are, it's about identifying that root trauma that is causing you to get addicted to things.
Find that pain. Was it Richard Wilson who also like stopped drinking alcohol because of ayahuasca? He was talking about it on Joe Rogan. He was like, you know, he was absolutely like alcoholic for 40 years of his life. And it did, like, he went to one camp of ayahuasca, and you know, like, he did not have urge even to, like, you know, taste alcohol anymore. And he said, you know, yeah, that happens. You know, it was one of those base traumas which was, you know, causing him to, like, every time he tried to quit, he would go back into it quickly. And, you know, ayahuasca helped him get out of that.
Yeah, this does happen. Same with smoking and any kind of addiction you might have. You can definitely get relief mm-hmm. by addressing the root trauma. And even knowing you have a trauma is not easy. You know, like, first step mm-hmm. on the path of healing is accepting that maybe you're not okay. And it's also not really accepted in our society these days. Everyone is, if you look at Instagrams, everyone's life is perfect. Nobody wants to say that they have problems. and that's part of a problem, you know, the pathological lying that we do, lying to everyone and to ourselves about how good everything is.
Yeah. Yes. You know, Sam, when you say things like this, like, I am lost in thoughts, I'm like, yeah, this guy is making sense now. Yeah, I think you have been on the journey where you have recognized enough things where, you know, anything that you say, you know, puts people into deep thoughts.
Well, that's our goal, right, for today. Mm-hmm. Give some people some new thoughts to think about. And I've been on the journey for a few years now, but the deeper I realize the hole goes. It's extremely interesting, this journey. Mm-hmm. Like, ayahuasca is not only a tool for healing and introspection, it's also a tool for spiritual exploration, because you start questioning things and getting realizations or visions that make you see world completely different. Like, I've totally changed my approach to thinking about what happens after we die. I no longer believe that we just rot and nothing else happens. Mm-hmm. I changed my thoughts on, I guess, meaning of life, or like why the world exists. Like, I kind of like start to collect a different picture, and I guess get slowly but surely get a little bit more spiritual, because I used to be mm-hmm. very non-spiritual, like mm-hmm. zero. And I try to do it carefully, because I also don't want to push people away mm-hmm. by sounding too woo-woo or too out there. But unfortunately or fortunately, the deeper you get, the further away you get from what we would normally expect a life to be.
It's also that, you know, people are living in this world of theirs where they have built these four walls, and they hope that nothing exists out of those four walls, right? Like, they are so afraid of truth, they don't want to know it.
It's sometimes it's easier to just sort of sweep things under the carpet.
Yeah.
But that sweeping, let's say you have mm-hmm. a problem, you sweep it under the carpet. It's like you have a dead mouse, you put it under the carpet. You don't see it, but you can still smell it.
Yeah.
And that is how, you know, from you have a trauma and it's somewhere in your brain mm-hmm. and it's covered by layers and layers of the carpet, mm-hmm. you know, the mental carpet. But mm-hmm. what comes out as a smell is that those symptoms like mm-hmm. addiction and depression, you know, it's just slowly poisoning your system. Mm-hmm. And you need to really go in there and clean it out. It's not going to be easy. It's probably like while you're doing it, it will smell even worse for a while, mm-hmm. but then it will get better.
Yeah, it's, and also when we sweep,
approaching the root cause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, even when, let's say, you sweep it under the rug, like, you know, you avoid it, right? But every time you cross that particular part of your house, you're like, yeah, I don't want to step on that. And yeah. Sam, let you know, like, tell me whether I'm right or wrong on this thought. Like, you know, because you brought up this, you know, not thinking about it purposefully. I feel like that's the number one thing when that happens, when people get offended for nothing. You know, you call someone fat or you call someone whatever it is, you mm-hmm. even complimented and they got offended, right? They're like, okay, like you're being offensive. And do you think that also comes from that kind of self-doubt or trauma?
Well, if you bring out something that is painful for them, mm-hmm. and they get reconnected with that pain, of course they're not gonna project it on themselves. They project it on you and blame you for that mm-hmm. pain, right? It's not that, you know, it's a big problem now in Western society. It's like you call me fat and I get offended and all triggered and I try and mm-hmm. cancel you, but why is it because it's your fault for making me feel bad? But no, it's actually your fault for being fat. Mm-hmm. Like it's about accepting the responsibility that mm-hmm. You became something and you have a power of not being that, mm-hmm. and sort of owning up to that and not projecting it on everyone. Mm-hmm. I had an experience, a negative experience once with a guest, and she had a problem with men in general, and she had a trauma around men, mm-hmm. and she was projecting that to me, as mm-hmm. you know, trying to put me in a position of this bad person that I'm not, mm-hmm. and people will project their stuff on people around them instead of going deep and healing it. That's unfortunately how we are. We don't like to confront things, mm-hmm. but this is where these kinds of medicines come in. They you have no choice. They will show you exactly what needs to be seen. Yeah, you can't run away from your own subconscious mm-hmm. when you're in those states, and this is where you get so much healing because it just shows you everything.
Yes, and you know how our parents told us, like, do not lie to yourself? And people are like, yeah, it's okay. No, I can lie to myself. And the older they get, they're like, oh, shit. I truly cannot lie to myself, right? Because, you know, somewhere the subconscious brain is like, I know you just fucking lied to me. You know, and that registers. And that happens once and twice and third and thrice. And slowly you start to lose confidence on your own abilities.
There's nothing worse than like inner conflict, right? Like a mm-hmm. part of you disliking another part of you, and this is also can create a lot of mental issues long term.
Yeah,
it's the tension in yourself.
Sorry, it was my dog. So, anyways. As you know, we were discussing about it, right? Like, I think today's 90% of trouble that we are facing in the world, I think, Sam, I think, you know, like, just collect all the world leaders in your retreat, okay, and let them just go through a camp.
I had this idea that in our political system, people that go and seek power mm-hmm. are generally not healthy, happy people. They mm-hmm. they seek it because they want power, because they maybe they've been hurt only on in their life and they're in pain, right? So mm-hmm. I thought about it that in the political system, if you want to fix it with stuff like ayahuasca, it's like, okay, you want to be a leader of your group of people, then you need to have a certain amount of ayahuasca ceremonies. Let's say 10 ayahuasca ceremonies to be mm-hmm. a director of a school. You want to mm-hmm. be a mayor, you need mm-hmm. 20. And maybe you want to be a senator, then you need a 30. And if you want to be a president, how about 100 ceremonies? Uh-huh. And this would filter out a lot of stuff. And then there will definitely be no stupid wars, because it's hard to fight wars on other people when you realize we're all connected. And the easiest way to get to that realization is, you know, through those modalities. It doesn't have to be ayahuasca. A lot of people come to those realizations through other traditions, like meditation and yoga. It just takes longer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so hard for us now to do that because we have such a short attention spans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was hearing this, you know, like a guy who made a documentary, you know, in New York, upstate, he went to a monastery, right? And it's like a monastery which has no access to outer world. And it's like a 1,000-acre property and, you know, no access to technology or anything. And, you know, he wanted to stay there for 14 days. And he thought it would, like, you know, it's easy, right? Like, so what? Like, 14 days is so easy. And the first day he went, you know, the monk took him to his dormitory where he was staying, you know, and that particular cell did not have any windows, nothing, just one bed, right? And a pillow. That's it. And it was 5:30 in the evening. And he said, okay, what do we do now? And the monk said, now you observe. And he was like, what the fuck do I observe? And, you know, the monk just smiled and went away. And the you know, the guy who went there, you know, he was like, okay, let me do a meditation. And he did a meditation where he felt like it was like 5 hours. When he opened his eyes, it was like just like 4 minutes. And, you know, that's when it said to him, he was like, oh shit, I'm really fucked, right? Like, I truly do not have any space to run from myself right now. So, you know, what you talk about meditation or yoga is, it's totally true that, you know, it is a tool, but it is very hard to achieve that kind of place.
Yeah, it's another thing that happens now. We keep ourselves distracted and never allow ourselves a chance to confront the pain. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the Vipassana meditation, the silent retreats, that's exactly the goal, I believe. I must say, it would be hard for me as well. Even after all ayahuasca I drank, it's still a very difficult thing to do, do nothing at all, because my mind just likes to fix problems. And when you don't have problems to fix, it's very difficult. We're used to so much stimulation these days. But I'd like to try one day.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to see how you would, you know, get through that, Sam, because it's truly interesting. Because the said author could only do for 12 days. Like, he was like, fuck this, you know, I'm going to go crazy if I keep doing this. There is no, you know, way in hell I'm going to do this. And he quit for 12 days. But there are monks in that particular, you know, monastery who have been there for 50 years. You know, so it's like either you run away in the starting or you just stay there.
Yeah, I would say a couple of weeks probably would be a good amount to do it. I thought about it because I have a lot of friends who have attended silent retreats, but unfortunately, if I would do it now, everything I was building for the last 2.5 years, my entire business would collapse without me being on my phone all day, replying to the messages and creating content and, you know, running the business.
Yeah. And I saw your Instagram for the you know, Lavera. It's very well put together. Like, first of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Well, that's one of my regular jobs that I have to do every day: post every day, create content every day, make sure people don't forget about us. And I'm being a messenger for ayahuasca to remind people that, you know, it's time to heal. And this podcast as well, you know, just reminding people that, you know, take some time off. You deserve it. You know, dedicate some time to yourself. Like, are you sure you're good? Are you sure you're okay? You know, maybe it's time to gift yourself time for yourself. And it's the biggest gift you can give yourself. And as I'm saying, even me, myself, I can drink ayahuasca, but I don't have a luxury to take a week off my work. That's it's an amazing, it's an amazing gift for yourself if you can do that.
Got it. And Sam, if people want to reach out to you, how they can do that?
I think the best way is to Google ayahuasca in Colombia or La Huayra, because our website is still Ayahuasca in Colombia, but if you go to lawara.com, you get redirected to us. I don't know if you're going to post the video, but you see La Huayra here in my t-shirt. It's L-A-W-A-Y-R-A. So if you Google Ayahuasca in Colombia, and that's not Colombia with C-O-L-U, but C-O-L-O, we should be somewhere there on top. And you can find us as La Huayra Ayahuasca on Instagram, La Huayra on YouTube, and where else are we? I think we're on TikTok as well as La Huayra.
Got it. And how big are these batches that you were just mentioning?
Batches?
Yeah, you said, you know, we were on break and then, you know, it will restart. So what's your like capacity if people want to come and like?
Generally, we have about the average group is about 20 people. It's a big property, big retreat with a lot of space. We have the shared rooms and the cabins, and it's very nice here, very beautiful.
And what's your like one suggestion to people who are coming to you know, get clarity in life to you?
What is my one what?
What's your one suggestion, you know, who are interested in getting on this journey?
Suggestion. I would say if you feel that that's something you might want to do, go and get some information. You know, at, for example, at our website, I have a recommended reading list that you could go through to get to know the subject more. Go check out the reviews and see what other people are saying, and maybe you can find people that had a similar problem that you have that fixed it. We have all that on our website. You can just read through. Just I would say getting information would be the first step, and then if you still feel like doing it, then just plan a trip and come get to healing. If just one thing we noticed, that people that come here from India, you need a visa. You need a visa. People sometimes book a trip, they last minute they say, "Oh, I realized I needed a visa." So just if you're coming from India, get a visa.
Yeah.
If you have a U.S. citizenship, then I think you don't need a visa.
Yeah, because they have habit of invading everywhere, so visa is not a problem for them. Yeah, Sam, it was very nice talking to you, because you know this is a very interesting topic, and it's a topic that people don't often talk about, and you are out here talking about it and, you know, creating that kind of awareness in people. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you as well. Thank you for having me and being open to talk about the subject. Yeah, as of now, it's still somewhat a prohibited topic, but I think it's going to change within the next 10 years, and everyone and your grandmom will be doing ayahuasca, and I think the world would be a better place. I really wish that happens.
I too. But thank you very much for being on the show, Sam, taking your time. And to my audience, guys, La Huayra's website will be in the, you know, episode link description. So just go there, click on the link, just check out what Sam is offering. And if you feel like you're interested in it, just contact him. You know, I think he will be able to highly assist you and help you with all the things that you're looking at. And until next episode, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Sam.